Okay, Esther's in Israel also, so also one less. Okay, good morning, everyone. This week is Parshas Chukas, another sad Parsha. The name of the Parsha is called Chukas because it starts Zos Chukas. This is the statute of the Pora Adum, of the red heifer. So we're introduced to the mitzvah of the red heifer, where the red heifer is burnt, and those ashes are saved to be mixed with water that can be used to purify people that have come in contact with the dead. Now, the people have come in contact with the dead. If you touch a dead person, you are tame. You may not enter into the temple. And we gave a class about that whole concept of tuma about a year and a half ago. And if you take the special water that's mixed with the paraduma ashes, you'll be able to purify the person. And the person, and also people involved in the purification, become tamei, which is an incredibly difficult law, but we're not going to go there today. This section is totally out of order in the Torah, because this mitzvah was given before the Jews celebrated their second Passover, which was in the beginning of Parshas Bemidbar. So time-wise, this is out of order, but that doesn't matter. Torah doesn't go in order. Then we come to the second story, which is a very sad story, when Miriam dies. Miriam dies, and in her merit, the Jewish people had water for 40 years that came from a be'er. Literally, it was called a well, although it was a rock. It was a rock. From the rock came water, so it was called the be'er Miriam, the well of Miriam. That sustained them throughout the 40 years that the Jews are in the desert. You know, a lot has happened all of a sudden in the skip from last week's parshas, Shlach and Korach, which is in the beginning of the 40-year trip. We're kind of fast-forwarding the items about 38 years now. Quick jump. And Miriam dies. Jewish people don't have, and the water stops. So God will have the Jews recognize that the water was in the merit of Miriam. Shem tells Moshe to go over to the rock, speak to the rock, and rock water will come from it. But instead of speaking to the rock, he hits the rock, which was a sin for Moshe. And we talked all about that 2 years ago, Parsha class. So I don't want to repeat things. This is opposed to what he did 39 years earlier when the Jews first were in the desert and they didn't have water. God told him to hit the rock. And he hit the rock as he was told, and that was appropriate. Here, he told him to take a stick and told him to speak to the rock. And he hit the rock. That was inappropriate. Okay, I'm not going into details with that story. Then there's a few other stories. Then we find that Aaron dies. Aaron, whose merit, the clouds of glory that protected them for 39 years, departed. And when that departed, Amalek tried to attack the Jews in the disguise of being Canaanites and hoping the Jews would pray incorrectly to their God and say, save us from the Canaanites, when it should be the Amalekites. But the Jews were victorious. And then there were some other complaints that the Jewish people had. A number of issues were going on. I can't go through all the stories. And then there was one remarkable story where the Jews were going to pass through a very narrow valley with mountains on both sides. And the enemies of the Jews felt this will be the most amazing opportunity to ambush the Jews. It's mamish, a perfect ambush. And they all stood at the tops of the mountains. And all they would have to do is just throw boulders down. You know, it's all just throw stuff down and it'd be a wipeout. And the Jews, unbeknownst to them, the top of the mountains, one had a cave indentation, one had like a pointy part, a cliff, right? And God made the mountains come together, and all the enemies who were in here got squished to death. The Jews did not realize that this was going on. They were just walking through. But that well that had the water, after Moshe hit the rock, the well came back. So that water that made rivers, literally rivers, so when the Jews were a few miles down the road, the river that was spreading far away, all the bones and skulls and limbs of the enemies who were killed got washed into their water, and then they realized that God had saved them. And when that happened, the Jewish people sang a song. And that is called the Shirat HaBe'er, the Song of the Well. And that's what we're going to talk about today. That's a topic not too many people will discuss in a Parsha class. You may not even know the story.
That's right.
But it's a story that happened, and we know the Torah, the Midrash tells us there are 10 songs that the Jewish people sang in the history of the world. First one was Az Yashir. This is another one, and there are many more in our history, and the 10th will be when Mashiach comes. And a shira usually means that it's an expression, it's not just a song, but it's an expression of realizing a new reality in your life. When the Jewish people saw what God did at the Sea of Reeds, they saw that God is really involved in their lives in a way greater than they ever could understand, which I can't go back into that. Whenever there's a shira, there's a song, it's not just, you know, that's cool. You know, top five on the charts. You know, it's coming from the depths of who you are. That's when it's the shiras in the Torah. It's a very brief shira, and it starts with the first line. It says, then Israel sang, it should not say sand, it sang. It's a typo. We can already start making corrections. Good. Can tell when it's a brand new class, because then it has mistakes. If I've given the class many years ago, and I've had a chance to go through the mistake. So then Israel sang this song and said, come up, O well, call out to it. And this is the beginning of their song. So there's a beautiful medrash that discusses this idea and notes a very a difference between this song and the first song. If anybody remember how the words of the Shira, you say it every day, Oz Yashir, say the first five words. Oz Yashir, then they sang, who knows the next three words? Izzy. Say it every day. Oz Yashir. Oz Yashir, he's nervous. I'm on the spot. Once I say, you're going to say, yeah. Oz Yashir, Moshe, Uvenei Yisrael. Right? That's right. Oz Yashir, then they sang, Moshe, and the Jewish people sang. That's what it says.
How many songs have been sung?
Nine.
We're
waiting for number 10. That was going to top the charts. All right. Oz Yashir Moshe Uvenei Yisrael. Then Moshe and the Jewish people sang. Here, what does it say? Oz Yashir Yisrael. Then Israel sang. Moshe's not in the picture. Moshe's alive still. He's alive. He's not there, so what's going on? So let's see what the Medrash notes. When the children of Israel sang the song of the sea, that was going back, Moshe did not allow them to say it by themselves. Rather, just like a teacher who reads along with the student when he is young, so too Moshe read with them. As it says, then Moshe and the children of Israel sang, like a youth who repeats after his teacher. You go to Cheder, the Rebbe says the Pasuk, Kometz Aleph Oh, Kometz Beis Bo, Vayedaber Hashem, El Moshe Leimor, and they repeat, Vayedaber Hashem, El Moshe Leimor. That's how it is in the Cheders. The Rebbe says, the kids repeat. So that's what at the Song of the Sea, Moshe said the Jews will repeat it. You know, that's how he taught them. After 40 years, they matured and sang the well by themselves. They sang the song by the well themselves. All right? As it says, then Israel sang this song. They said, Hashem, it is up to you to do the miracles, and it is up to us to sing. That's a very nice medrash. What's the message of the medrash? What's the medrash teaching us? That's what we're going to explore today. But really, if we talk about wells, the truth is, a well is a very endearing term. You may not have realized it, but in the third source, when we read in Shir HaShirim, Song of Songs, which every good Jew tries if they can, Erev Shabbos, before Shabbos, if you have time to sing Shir HaShirim, because it is the love song between Hashem and the Jewish people, and the Jewish people and Hashem. And in chapter 4, verse 15, How does Hashem refer to the Jewish people? He calls us purified in a garden spring, a well of waters alive and flowing clear from Lebanon. Hashem is calling the Jewish people a spring of living waters. So now what we want to spend a good part of the class today is, what does it mean to call someone a spring of living waters? And we find this term many times in the Torah. We could have given this class in the book of Bereishis, when the patriarchs, we have a lot of talk, interestingly, about the patriarchs. Each of the patriarchs, they all were involved with wells. It's very interesting. Avram dug wells. The Philistines covered up his wells. Yitzhak uncovered the wells, dug new wells. Yaakov, although he didn't dig a well, he came to a well when he met Rachel. It's a lot of focus on wells. Very interesting detail that the Torah is giving a lot of play, especially in Yitzchak's life. There's a whole chapter in the Torah dealing with all the wells that he dug. So there's obviously, you know, it's not just an interesting story. But now we're seeing more than this. Hashem is calling us wells. So in order to appreciate what this song is about, because this song is called the Song of the Well, we have to know, what does it mean that the Jewish people are compared to a well? And that's called a Be'er Mayim Chaim, a well of living waters. So let's explain what this means and how this applies in our lives. So, there are two basic types of water in this world. The Torah I'm going to teach you now is from one of the earlier Lubavitcher Rebbe's, the Mittler Rebbe, Rev Dov Be'er. From that Rebbe, he's the second of the Lubavitch Rebbe. So he says this piece, and other Lubavitch Rebbe's have expanded on the piece, but it's basically this piece. He says that there are two types of water in this world. Two types of water, which are called mystically Mayim Elyonim, waters that have come from above and are down here. And then there's something called Mayim Tachtonim, water that comes from below. So water from above, that's the oceans, that the rain comes down, and the rain comes down and it goes, it eventually trickles into rivers, into oceans. That's the rain that comes from above, from right up there. Then we know that underneath the ground, there's water. And we have to dig to get to that water, and that's called the waters of below, the lower waters. The waters are coming from below, coming up. Now, what's the difference between these waters? First, let's look at it on a scientific level. Which water works more within the laws of physics? Laws of physics. Which water is easier to understand than the other? The water from the top, because physics says what goes up comes down. It's gravity. Rains, it comes down. So the water that we see that comes from above, that's naturally produced water insofar that it fits into the laws of nature. When you dig down and you find water, you go to Old Faithful geyser, whatever. What state is that in? It's in the United States, somewhere out west, I think, right? Where is it? That I can think about. I'll give you something to think about. Jog your memory now, right? Anyway, Washington. But that thing is shooting up water, right?
But that's water that's it's underground river.
I understand.
Which is the water that's come from the top.
But from our perspective, it's coming from below.
Okay.
And it's shooting up. It's coming out of the ground. Seems to be going against the laws of nature, right? So this is one difference between the higher waters and the lower waters. But more than this, the lower waters are called Mayim Chaim, are called living waters. The water, when rain comes down, we don't call it Mayim Chaim, called Geshem. We call it Geshem. Interesting. Geshem. What does the word Geshem mean? You say it means rain. Mashifa Ruach Merida Geshem. Geshem has the same word as Gashmius, physicality, which is not such a spiritual term. you know, it's gashmius. It's like physicality, food and eating, drinking, and that kind of stuff. It's more of a physical, baser definition. Why you don't call water that comes from the bottom geshem. Now, you have a word called mayim, water, but you know, when it rains, we don't say, you know, mayim's coming, it says geshem. Geshem, we don't say mashiv haruach marid ha-mayim. We say marid ha-geshem, call it geshem. What comes down from the bottom is always called mayim, and almost always called mayim chaim. If it's a natural spring, if it's a spring that you are doing as a receptacle to get water from the rain, that's still the upper waters coming down. There's two ways to make a well. You can have a well that is just there, and if it rains, water goes in. Make a well that you've tapped into the underground system, and then you're bringing natural spring water coming into the well. Okay. Why are these called Mayim Chaim, living waters? Because the water has the ability, as we will explain, to go against the current, and it's really breaking through the obstacles that were presented before it, which was the earth. Rock, sand, filth, schmutz. It is able to get through those obstacles, and it is called Mayim Chaim. They're strong waters, waters of vitality. And the question is, where do these waters receive their vitality from? What's so unique about these waters? And this is what the Jewish people are called when we're really on top of our game. So the Mittler Rebbe explains like this. There's a word we have to understand. There's a word in Judaism, a word that's called chidush, or in yeshiva expression called chidish. It doesn't translate so easily in English. Chidush. Chidush can be translated, literally comes the word chadash, which means new. Let's say when you're learning Talmud, you're in a yeshiva, that's a very popular word. You go into yeshiva, you're going to say, well, what chidish have you come up with today? When you're studying Torah, you could come up with a novel insight. And the novel insight is called a chidush. That's a new idea. A new idea. And that idea of a chidush, generally, when you hear that word, it's very exciting. Person said, you know, I came up with a chidush today. I'm very happy with myself. I came up with a new idea, a new concept. It's a chidush, right? And there's different levels of chidushim. There could be chidushim in Torah thoughts, in your thoughts. I come up with a great idea. You know, a brainstorm. Right? Just pop. Ooh, great idea. I've been working on something and look what I discovered. There could be chidushim in emotions. I feel differently now than I felt before. It could happen during davening. Just a new way of looking at things. So what is the nature of this concept that gets us excited? Now, I don't know if you've ever had that excitement in life. Okay? But there is a great excitement when you're studying Torah and you come up with a novel idea that's correct. Not that it's incorrect. There's an excitement there. We'll start in a minute. Almost all of you, maybe all of you, have all experienced a chiddush. You just don't know that it is a chiddush. I'll show you in a minute what I'm talking about. But it's very exciting. What is the nature of a chiddush? It can't just be a novel thought alone to generate excitement. So the Rebbe explains like this. He says, the joy of a chiddush, think for a minute, what is the greatest form of chiddush? What is the greatest form of bringing something new into existence? It would be based on the formula of how God created the world of Yesh Meyayin, something from nothing. God created the world, the greatest chiddush possible, the greatest new idea, newest concept, is to bring something into reality from where there was nothing before it. The greatest, we call God's creation of the world, is called in Talmudic parlance, chidush ha'olam, the newness of the world. The world was made brand new. What do we mean brand new? It's not that we took a piece of material and made a brand new chair. It's where there was nothing, and now there's something. And we go, wow, that's amazing. Sometimes a magician will try to feign that when you're pulling a rabbit out of a hat, right? Now we know there's a trick there, but if you didn't, but a little kid, a 5-year-old who hasn't been jaded yet, okay? And the guy says, look at the hat, there's nothing in my hat, right? All of a sudden, whoa, it's a living rabbit. So why do people like that, you know, before you get jaded? Right? First time you say, wow, how do you do that? Because what's the chop of it? Like, what's the attraction? He pulled a rabbit out of the hat. There was nothing there. He showed me nothing here, nothing there, nothing on my sleeve, right? What's that whole idea? What's that enticement of liking to watch a magic show? It's because what they're claiming, of course, there are tricks, but they're claiming is, what do you mean? I'm making something coming out of nothing. So what is that trying to copy? Although we know there's a trick. I'm trying to copy what God did when he created the world. Now, we weren't there, but if we had been there when God created the world, we'd be blown away. All of a sudden, boom, there's something there. There's nothing there. And now something there. Boom, that's a chidush. The magician's attraction is he appears to make a chidush, and that's very exciting. Right? So, it's interesting, the first two letters of the word chidush. Chidush is spelled ches, yud, dalet, vav, shin. The first two letters is chai, life. So the biggest chidush that one can experience in the world is life itself. Let me explain. A man gets together with a woman. The man, what does he do? He introduces a little bit of sperm to an egg, which is really, in the scope of things, very, very little. And all of a sudden, 9 months later, boom, chidush. A complete human being is in the world. Now you understand why you got so excited when your first kid was born. A little less excited when the second, but the first one is like incredible. Because the first time, look what I did. Because really, you almost, you made something out of totally nothing. All right, there was a little bit of sperm, right? But even that sperm, you know, you produced that sperm, so to speak. Okay, it's not 100% like God, where God took, where there's absolutely zero. But this is as close as we can do it, because we are already finite people in a world that exists. What's the closest that we can approximate that thrill, that excitement of chidush, of producing something new and exciting? It's from a place where you saw nothing. There was a man and a woman and nothing else. And all of a sudden, and it's not like they went to a Home Depot, you know, and bought lots of lumber and lots of things and made a Pinocchio. That wouldn't be something from nothing. No, we didn't make Pinocchio. We made a real human being. We made a real, with what? You know, to the naked eye, you didn't even see anything. That's real magic, right? That gets people very excited. The greatest chidush is transforming something from nothing. Whenever you do that, that generates a lot more excitement than something from something. Even if you will look, that's interesting. What are you more, it's interesting how the world doesn't know how to look at things properly. What do you get more excited about? Mount Rushmore or a little baby? Well, I don't know. I think most people get very excited about Mount Rushmore. That's incredible. How'd the guy do it? It's huge. It's big. The four presidents. You know, it's not your baby. Let's take an independent third party, visits Mount Rushmore, and takes a look at your baby. Believe me, your baby, no, nothing personal, is not a tourist attraction. Mount Rushmore is. Now, I'm not taking away from the architects of Mount Rushmore at all, but what they did was to create something from something. It was all there. They just chiseled away. I'm not minimizing. They did a great accomplishment, but as great as it was all there. You know, what does Michelangelo say? What did they say about his amazing sculptures? I don't remember the exact wording. He said something like, everyone says, you know, you made an amazing creation. He said, I didn't create anything. I just revealed what was already there. Okay, the genius was to not reveal it. And as great as that is, we're not minimizing. I'm not meaning to put down Mount Rushmore. I'm not meaning to put down Michelangelo. What I am meaning to say is to say how amazing we are, because the power of Chiddush of bringing a baby in the world is infinitely more exciting than that. If our heads are on straight. If our heads are on straight. Okay, now that we understand, this is what excites us about a Chiddush. Understand? So you've all, you know, the fact, at least when the child was first born, you were very excited. could be 20, 30, 40 years later, you know, there ain't much chiddush in that kid anymore. So you say, you know, it's my kid, you know. You love him, but you know, you're not excited every time you see him. You know, so in other words, the last time, you gotta think, now we're gonna talk about excitement in life. We wanna have life be exciting. Don't want life to be thrilling and exciting. So, I mean, think of all the real, honest to goodness thrills you had in life. I think that first baby was gonna rank up as one of the highest. When you were in there, and they gave him your baby. You look at that baby, that little live organism that somehow you made. It was like, wow, it's amazing, right? But it's not meant to stop there. So now let's talk of with this idea. Okay, now we got this idea. Now you understand what a chidush is. Chidush, bringing something that wasn't there into light. You could study a piece of Torah, and then you can come out. You just pull something out of there that just wasn't there. A new idea. That's exciting. And you have to be smart enough to be able to do that. You have to know a lot to be able to do that. But you can pull that out. Discovering something, you know, out of thin air is very exciting. So what's the difference between the two waters? Okay. The upper waters, there's no chidush. It was up there to begin with, and it comes down. It's there. You know, the oceans are not exciting. Okay, but the lower waters, they're alive. There is real chiddush. There is something new. Again, it's relative, because of course the water was there all along, but you just walk along the desert, and it's dry and arid, and there's nothing there. Right? So, you might find a little pond, because the rain that made a pond. But that was something that was always there. But you look and there's no ponds, there's nothing. And you say, you know what? You know the old-fashioned, these guys with the rain sticks, you know? Watch the old cowboy movies. What? The vining rod, right? Oh, yeah. Here, dig here, right? And you dig and you dig and you dig and you're getting filthy and getting dirty and getting dirtier and dirtier and dirtier. Going 1 foot, 2 feet, 10 feet, 20 feet, going on. And all of a sudden, boom! The water comes flying out. You know? Even though we know all the water comes from Hashem. Okay, but beyond that. But the lower waters were concealed. They weren't there. If I asked you, we're walking the Mojave Desert. Look over here, stretch from out. You see any water? Ain't no water here. There's absolutely no water here. And what we're gonna dig right here. Down the line and boom! Now you've created yesh me'ayin, something from nothing. That's a chidush. The lower waters represents the concept of chidush, bringing something that didn't exist before. Just like the baby, and think about the baby. You know, the baby doesn't come out of what we would call the most prestigious part of the body. When the baby has to enter the world, it goes from a place of spiritual impurity. But, you know, it's a part that's covered up, you know, like it's not coming out of your ear, you know, delivered a baby through. And a guy could have a baby delivered in lots of places, you know. You know, you burp out a baby, you know. If he would have done that, we'd think it's normal. If 6 billion people are burped out of a mouth, you think that's normal. But Hashem had it come out. Or we could have, you know, babies growing on trees. You know, you just plant a few seeds in the ground. You know, but God decided from the part that is supposed to be covered and restricted and a part of the body that a lot of bad things can happen if we're not holy people. From that least likely place, boom, comes out a baby. That's like the lower waters. The idea of the lower waters is breaking through rocky opposition. Because the water's there, but it ain't gonna come out. There's too much opposition for that water to come out. Right? And you've gotta dig, and you gotta push, and you gotta do all those things. And it's no different than a baby. A baby's got to get through. Very rare a woman said, you know, I just came out and feel nothing. Not too many women have told me that. You know, I just walk by and boom, it just popped out. I didn't realize I was even pregnant. I didn't realize I was expecting. And it just popped out. Not 9 times that I was a first-hand observer. There's a lot of opposition from that baby to get out. But when he comes out, boom, that laugh right at the end, all of a sudden, boom, comes flying out, and you got to make sure to catch them fast, right? So that's incredible. So now think about it. Which water do you pay the most money for? Which water is bottled? Which water is for the naive? Right, you know, Evian spelled backwards is naive, but anyway, we won't go there. The bottled waters comes from the springs because they are the sweetest waters. The purest, sweetest waters. Not the lakes, not the oceans. Oceans are salty. Not even rainwater, even without the acid rain. Rainwater does not taste as good as water that's bottled from the ground. Okay? Why is that so? Because that's what God is showing us. This is what's most special to me. What's most special to me is the water that's come through chidush, through newness, the novelty of a chidush, something from nothing, on our level, because we can't make something from nothing absolutely like God can. But as far as we're concerned, from a place where it's ugly, place where it's dirty and filthy and dry, you can bring the sweetest water. That's the greatest chidush you could imagine. And that's why you get a lot of excitement when those things happen. When you finally found the spot and dug and the water comes out, the most incredible joy happens, much more than if it just rains. Rain's okay, it came from above. You know, you expect it to come from above. But when it comes from below, and you find it, that's an incredible chidush. Okay, I hope I've explained enough the idea of chidush and why we get excited about it. So now let's take a look, for example, in source number 4 in Pirkei Avos. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai had many students, and he enumerated their qualities. Rabbi Elazar ben Arach was called a Mayan Hamiskaber. He was called a spring that steadily increases its flow. In other words, he always had novel things to say. So let's try to explain this a little bit. The truth of the matter is, each and every one of us in this room has certain ideas and emotions inside of us, but are covered up by coarse layers of reality. You know, that, you know, because of the stresses of life and lots of things that happen in our lives, there's a lot of incredibly deep, profound feelings, emotions, ideas that really you could bring out, but you're just not capable because you're so bogged down with everything that's on top. Right? And sometimes you may hear a song and you don't know why, but it just makes you cry. Sometimes you smell something, flowers, whatever. All of a sudden you start getting teary-eyed. You don't know why. Right? You see something. Those emotions, because you're becoming like a well. Those tears that you would, why am I don't know why I'm crying about this. I don't know why I'm crying, and you're crying. Because there's something inside, deep, that's start trying to surface, even not at your cognitive level. But something's been touching. I'm just trying to give you an example of this. There's certain thoughts and feelings and emotions that are sitting, waiting to be released, and they need a trigger. And suddenly the trigger happens. So let's talk about the world of ideas first. It's easier to explain it this way, but we'll come to the others. You know, let's say you have a teacher, you know, and there were certain great rabbis. You can tell there's a great rabbi and a regular rabbi, teacher. You know, regular teacher, student asks a question, they'll either say, you're wrong, you're right, whatever. In the yeshiva world, for example, the rabbi would prepare a very deep, well-thought-out approach of logic to explain the Talmud. Okay. Now, there's more than one approach to understanding a piece of Talmud. It's very complex. But that's the whole idea. The rabbi is presenting you the way he feels it should be understood. Now, most students who come into class just listen, and they try to just understand what he's saying. But then you have some really smart guys. Not smart Alex, smart guys. Smart guys who really, they learned the piece of Talmud too. And they look at it a little different than the rabbi looked at it, which they're allowed to. There's 70 faces to the Torah. It's not only one way to understand a complex piece of Talmud. And, you know, so what happens when the rabbi's giving his talk, and in the middle, one of the students asks a question and says, you know, I kind of looked at it this way. So some rabbis, you know, There was one particular rabbi, a very big genius. So sometimes the boy would just say, talk for 3-4 minutes. This is a long, many years ago. And the rabbi would just, after he spoke, then the rabbi just would continue, wouldn't even comment on what he was saying. Nicely saying, you know, you're full of baloney, you don't know what you're talking about. But he says, okay, and as I was saying, and he just goes on. Sometimes, though, when one of the young men would offer an insight, the rabbi would adjust his glasses and then very firmly attack his answer with questions. And then the student gets a little scared because it's a big rabbi. Big rabbi's attacking my answer. And then if the student's got the courage, he defends it. And the rabbi asks another question. And he has to come up with an answer to that. And he asks him another question. And he has to come up with that. And by the time the rabbis got through with him, the rabbi, who was a genius, he realized that that student was stumbling onto something. The student has stumbled onto a new approach to understand this, but he hasn't fully developed it. But if I'll ask him a few questions to force him to refine his thinking, he will have a really beautiful understanding. And that's what we would really call a chidush. Because sometimes you need resistance. You have a good idea, but it's not totally thought out. And you don't know, you yourself don't know how good that idea can be until you meet some resistance. You have to think of a way to answer it. And by answering it, you have to develop another idea and another idea. And then when you're finished with all those answers, you now have a really cogent concept that's incredibly novel. The good teacher will know how to bring that out of the student. You with me? I don't know if you've ever experienced this, but you know, now if you're a great rabbi, you'll know the many options of how to understand it, and you'll hear when somebody's stumbling on to something, you know, instead of just finishing it off, they'll say, you're saying good, but say it better. You're saying good, but say it better. And the boy's afraid because the rabbi's a big rabbi, right? So go ahead, come on, don't give up. And trying to pull it out, pull that inside out. You know, just like the baby being delivered, it's starting to come. And then I can't, it's getting hard, it's too hard to push. What do they say? Push, 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 it hurts, I don't want this. Push! Boom, out it goes. That's chidush. Chidush takes a lot of effort. Right? There's obstacles that have to be overcome, and that's where the chidush comes from. So what do we have so far? We understand there's lower waters. Lower waters represents the world of chidush. Chidush means something incredible, because remember, the lower waters are sweeter waters than you have now. You could be satisfied to go over to the river. The stream tastes so good. But if you get the water that comes right from the earth, it tastes the best. Harder to come by, many obstacles. That's the beauty of the lower waters. Okay? Now, Talmud tells us in source number 5, I couldn't find a source of what I call the Jewish aphorism, because everybody says it. It goes way, way back. In Hebrew, it's called Ein Chacham Kebal HaNisayon. That translates to, there is no wise person as one who has experience. Wisdom is the best experience. You know, for example, let's say this guy... This young university graduate who just graduated in horticulture. Plays from the University of Iowa. I don't know where they have horticulture, right? And he learns all the theory of how to grow crops, right? So he comes in with his freshly pressed suit right onto this huge farm. And there's the farmer there with his blue jeans and his grimy hands, you know, 50 years of work in the land. And the college student's coming with his clipboard and his computer, and he's telling him how he's going to grow his crops. Meanwhile, the kid has not even touched a tomato in his life, but he's learned all about the atomic structure of the tomato and all these things. You know, and he comes in and says, well, you know, I think, Mr. Farmer, you should be doing this and this and that. And he's patiently listening and he's laughing. He says, yeah, and let me tell you, what's going to happen when it doesn't rain for 4 weeks? Oh, they didn't teach me that in school. I know, I've been through it 50 times in my life. And I still got the farm. In other words, what's the point? The point is, experience is the best teacher. As much as you think you know things, which you did, But experience refines that. You know, of course, we all know that teenagers are the experts on how to raise kids. And the biggest proof is every teenager will tell you that. Right? They are not experts on love. This is true love, Dad. I've had many very, superficial relationships in the first 14 years of my life. But now at 15, I have found true love and I know it for a fact. And Dad and Mom, what do you know? You're a bunch of alta cockers. You're already over 30. You don't know nothing. Right? Of course, there's no one smarter than that, right? And then when they get to be our age, all of a sudden, that Bissell Klieger, maybe they're a little bit smarter, right? You know, the famous line, when a person became a parent, they said, I had all the rules of parenting, right? And all the rules. And then 20 years later, they said, I didn't know anything. Now these are the rules, right? That's the way life is. Why? What does experience mean? Experience, real experience. Experience, by definition, means obstacles. That's what experience is. You're a businessman, right? You go to Shulik. You graduate Shulik. They give you all the theories, right? But now you get into the real world and you have to deal with the real stress and the real things. Your company's going down and you've been bankrupt 6 times already, but you know the name of the game. You don't make those same mistakes. That's experience. The farmer understands it. The student doesn't understand it. Chachma gets refined because of the challenges, because of the questions. You're a farmer. You said, I'm going to plant. The book says plant, irrigate, this, that. You get the thing. Well, you weren't expecting a tornado coming in. You weren't expecting the locusts coming. Now what are you going to do, smarty pants? Because if you don't think fast, you know, it's, you know, 100, 200 years ago, you didn't have stuff being shipped in from other parts of the country. You didn't have a crop. You're dead. Plain and simple. Hundreds of years ago, you're dead. So, and what happened the first time? Many people died. Somehow you survived. Then you realize, you know what? I always have to take into consideration, no matter how much it looks like it's going to work, always save, no matter how much you have. Who taught you that? Experience taught you that. No matter how low the crop is, save 20% of your crop. So in case there's no food next year, you're still going to somehow live with 20% of the crop. Whatever that experience teaches you. But how did you become so smart? Well, that was a great idea to save some of that food. You know, well, because I experienced a difficult obstacle in my life. I almost died from it. And the obstacle forced me to realize that I got to do something to overcome that obstacle. And that made me the great farmer that I am today. After all these years of experience, nothing's going to happen I haven't seen. And I know exactly how to prepare for every eventuality that can happen. That's chachma. That's wisdom. Now, there, unfortunately, the difference between a chacham and a fool is very simple. The chacham learns from his mistakes. The fool doesn't. So a lot of people maybe have experience in life, but they're still fools because they didn't learn anything from it, right? But the smart person learns from that. Okay, so chachma gets refined with questions. Really, that's what the Pesach Seder is all about. You start the Seder with 4 questions, with resistance. Obstructions. What are we celebrating? I understand. What's going on over here? Remember we talked about, was it last week? About which class was this? No, it wasn't in this class. Different class. The why question. Young children always ask why. Well, why? We're going for a walk today. Why? Well, because it's a sunny day outside. Why? Always whys. Forcing you to refine what you're doing. You have a beautiful Seder. You sit down on a Seder. Now, if we would take the questions of the children seriously, you'd be very upset. You're sitting down. You have a nice meal. And the kid's asking a bunch of questions. Why is this night different all the other nights? Why are we having a chametz and matzah? Well, that's the way it is. Now, why? Oh, I don't know. That's what my grandfather did. Well, that's not a reason to do it. And now, little kid's going to be very obnoxious. If you can't tell me why we have matzah, I ain't eating it. I'm bringing a piece of bread to the meal right now if you can't answer my question. What's with that bitter stuff over here? Why is it bitter? Everything's fine now. Why do I need bitter stuff over here? And if you're telling me, you know, because we used to suffer at matzah, so why are we reclining? Why are we dipping twice? Why? Listen, Dad, with all due respect, you don't know what the heck we're doing here. That's an obstacle. That's an obstruction. You don't know what you're doing. So, what's the whole goal of the Seder? Is to answer the questions. overcome the obstacles and appreciate what you really have and what freedom really is. But you only can appreciate it after you've overcome the questions and answered them, and now you've got some real wisdom. Okay? So, all what we're saying is this great ability to uncover that which is hidden takes a lot of experience, a lot of effort. Okay, let's go back to Song of Songs. Hashem calls the Jewish people, the most loving term he could think of, a Be'er Mayim Chaim, a well of living waters. What does that really mean? Every Jew, each one of us, is a well of living waters. Well, it's very simple. We all really are a soul that was up in heaven. Our souls, before we were born, were up in heaven, and they were such beautiful souls, the most amazing souls, because God made them himself. And you were above, and you were next to God, and things were clear, and it was beautiful, and you were in touch with the total reality, and it was amazing. Now, that's like being the upper waters, right? Then all of a sudden, God presses a button, and you're going down, 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 into a body, into the greatest realm of confusion in your life. Totally covered up by this indescribably different mass called a physical body that processes things for you, and a world that's got good and that's got bad, a world that hurts, a world that's got filth, a world of filth mixed with good, all these things. Where is that beautiful water? Where's that beauty? Where is the beauty that me and you have? I can't see it. It doesn't appear to be there. Now, before you were born, it was right there. You were right there. There was something else there. Hi, God. Oh, it's great. I'm a soul. It's great. The upper waters. Now, all of a sudden, where? It's harder. It is harder to find your soul than to find water in the Mojave Desert. But they're going to have to do the same thing. Dig. That's what's happening. Hashem, why is Hashem doing this? Why is Hashem putting my beautiful, beautiful soul in such a disgustingly mundane body that many say is very similar to a monkey? All right? What happens is because Hashem wants the God, the soul, to become a Be'er Mayim Chaim, a living spring of water. Because from all the misery and the questions and the challenges, we got to get this water out. We got to get this soul out. And when it comes out, you're going to experience the most beautiful water you've ever tasted in your life. A soul that stays in heaven all its life, it's like the oceans. It's like the lakes. It's there. It's given to you. But if you've got to dig and find that soul, when that soul pours out, you know, it says, you know, Paul says, Shivchi kamayim libeh, let your heart pour like water. All these analogies of gushing, emotions gushing. You know, this is, what does it mean, emotions? It means your soul gushing forth. Your soul is gushing forth. That's how Hashem is describing us. A garden spring, a well of waters alive and flowing. That's what we're capable. There's so much love that we have for Hashem that we don't recognize. So much understanding of Hashem that we don't recognize. If we would bring it out, it would be so sweet and taste so good. And it'll never come out unless you have to deal with obstructions and obstacles in life. You know, you go through your life and if everything's fine, there's no problems, the soul's just going to sit there and you're going to forget about it. All of a sudden, God throws a few obstacles in your life. All of a sudden, you lose all your money. All of a sudden, you lose someone you love. All of a sudden, something you planned on for sure going to happen doesn't happen. It hurts. There's an obstacle. How do I continue my life when the way I've been living my life, it's not making sense now? Why is God doing that? He's doing it because he knows that there's a well inside that you don't even know exists. If you don't walk in the desert and you live next to the ocean, you're never going to dig for water. You'll find a refinement plant and change the salty water to regular water. If you live near a river, you don't dig very hard. You don't work very hard. If you're in the desert, you got to work hard for every drop of water you get. But when you get that water, man, it tastes better than the water you've ever had before. So what Hashem is telling us is that you're all a beautiful well, a spring. But the only way the spring water, and that's our definition, that's what, it's a beautiful way of looking at yourself. And all of a sudden these incredible challenges come in your life that would seem to say, no, God doesn't love you, God doesn't listen. So you have to start answering questions. Or you've had certain hokey philosophies of how the physical world runs, and you play the game the way everyone tells you it plays, and it's not working at all. And you start asking questions, you start getting uncomfortable, it starts getting painful. Okay? And what's Hashem trying to bring out? He's trying to say, you gotta dig deeper inside yourself. You know, the Chazal tell us that when God separated the higher waters and the lower waters, different waters than the one we're talking about, that the higher waters, we don't see them. The lower waters screamed out, we want to be in front of the king. You know, when obstacles separate us, so we know there's an insistence to get closer to what's separating you, then there's great struggles. The soul really wants to get closer to Hashem. The neshama is, literally from our perspective, as far as from our view, all of you would think, from what your scientific mind says, there's nothing inside of here besides flesh and blood. Or as an atheistic coroner once says, I've dug up a million cadavers and never dug out a soul from them once. So as far as our physical reality, there is nothing inside of us. But the truth of it is there is an incredible godly soul that you've got to find. And as far as we're concerned, that's yesh me'ayin. That's something from nothing. And when you can bring out and feel that soul, the feeling is more incredible than finding water in the middle of the desert. That's what each and every Jew has. And now you understand source number 6 that says, in the place where a Baal Tshuva stands, complete tzaddikim are unable to stand. We're not just talking about the Baal Tshuva term that we have today. We're talking about hundreds of years ago where there was a Jew who was a Jew, but he sinned. There's regular Jews who are Orthodox Jews who sin. And you do a lot of sins. But then you do Tshuva and you come back. And the place where the Baal Tshuva stands, the person who never sinned once in his life cannot stand in that place. Why? Because the Baal Tshuva had to overcome obstacles. He had to create something from nothing. And when you crawl out of the dirt, right, that's the insight, the chidush of the Baal Tshuva. When it comes out, the Baal Tshuva explodes with an enthusiastic prayer. He's learning, he's on fire when he's learning, because he had to explode to get through those barriers. And those are the sweetest waters than the lakes and the oceans. Well, the person's been religious all his life, it's been there all the time. I'm used to regular tap water. And their lives become not living waters, but regular waters. Right? That's the difference. It's not a question is, how do you discover the water within yourself? And to this, the next pasuk of the song. Remember, let's come back to what we started the Parsha class with. The song of the what? Of the well. Now you can understand what's going on over. We're not talking about the song, not the Sea of Reeds. The Sea of Reeds was what? Was the natural water coming from above. The Sea of Reeds is water coming from above. This is the song of the well. Song of the well. Well, meaning from below, coming up. Wow, we're singing a song now. But what's the second verse say? Source number 7. Be'er chafru asorim, a well that the princes dug. Karua nidiveam, that the nobles of the people excavated. So says the Mittler Rebbe. He says, I'll basically tell you in one line, then we'll read inside what he says. He says, in order to discover wells, you have to be prepared to excavate. Right? Many people are afraid to excavate because excavations bring up dirt that you didn't realize that was there beforehand. On the surface, it's a little bit dirty, but when you dig really deep, it gets really dirty. You know, sometimes when you sell a house, there's certain laws on the sale. There can't be any oil underneath, right? And sometimes you excavate and you find there's oil there. And that's supposed to be bad. I don't know why, but it's supposed to be bad. It gets into your systems, whatever. And it can cost hundreds of thousands of dollars to be able to get rid of that problem. But the problem is, you know, when you dig deep, you don't find good stuff for the first 20 feet. You find a bunch of worms, a bunch of dead things, a bunch of filth and schmutz. And what we have to do is we have to dig inside of ourselves, dig up old dirt. We have to start realizing, why is it that I am the way I am? And you're going to find, as you're starting to dig, a lot of ugly stuff in your life. Did that thing stop or still going?
Huh?
Okay. But if you really think about it, you know, we go through life, but if you really analyze your life, you analyze certain beliefs and philosophies you really have, if you dig deep enough, I'm not saying you, I'm giving examples, but these are common examples. I'm not indicting anybody here. But, you know, if you dig deep enough about your life, don't you really believe that I come before everybody else? If you dig deep enough, you may find that's the way you live your life. You've been living your life for a long time that way. You always come before somebody else. Even though the Torah says you give tzedakah, and even though the Torah says this, but you made sure after you were totally comfortable always, you never ever did anything for anybody before you were totally covered. You may find that. You may not realize when you're in the middle of that. You know, just like Korach never realized in last week's parsha how jealous he was, because he didn't want to dig deep. He just said, I'm doing it for everybody's sake. But to really dig deep and ask yourself, keep digging and say, why are you doing that? Why did you do that? Why did you compliment that person? What do you mean, why did I compliment? It's a nice thing to compliment. Tell me the real truth, because you didn't compliment those other four people. Why did you compliment that person? Because you know he's got connections to somebody you want to do a business deal with? Be honest, let's dig. Let's dig. Well, maybe. Okay, why didn't you connections with that guy? Let's dig deeper. You know that guy's involved in illegal activities? Well, you know, I'm not... Man, really, really, you wouldn't mind being an illegal... You wouldn't mind. You wouldn't mind stealing from the government if they wouldn't catch you, right? Dig deeper. And then all of a sudden, you find an ugly person in there. Because that's your animalistic soul that's expressing itself in the worst ways, and that's how you've been living your life. And you get real, and then when you get that point, you start getting depressed. You fall into despair. But keep digging. Keep digging and dig deeper and dig deeper and dig deeper. And you realize, you know what? This was all mishigas. And you dig deepest, you'll find there is something beautiful and pure that I've totally missed out in my life. And I finally found what I should be doing. Now, in many more words, and much better than I could say, that's what the tzaddik says, and I hope I translated it properly. But these are the words of Rav Dov Ber himself. He says, this whole thing we're talking about, he says, it is an aspect of a broken and shattered heart into many small pieces, until the heart is humbled like soft sand that can be easily removed. It is the concept of the crying out from the depths with intense bitterness, which is referring to as plowing that softens the earth. When a person digs more into the coarse earthliness of the heart, it is like the seriousness and surrendering of the heart before prayer. You're supposed to, you know, an hour, the Talmud says an hour before you pray, you're supposed to meditate. What's the first? Where one thinks a lot about his sins and evil foreign lusts until his heart is like an empty vacuum, like very soft soil. Then he will find that aspect of the living waters. It's incredible, incredible how these tzaddikim analyze. We just look at a well and say, it's a well, big deal. Tzaddik looks at a well and says, a well is, God called us a well. A well, a natural spring. You got to dig and dig and dig. And it gets dirtier and dirtier and dirtier. And when you think you're never going to get anything, all of a sudden, boom, not just trickles, it comes flying out. The sweetest water imaginable. That, but you have to be prepared to dig and to suffer while you're digging. Now, a descendant along this line, a later Rebbe, Rebbe Rashab, from Sholem Be'er, says the following. Take the word Be'er in your mind, in Hebrew, Be'ez Aleph Resh is a Be'er. It's an acronym for the following three words. And you say it every day in Adon Olam. Be'yado Afkid Ruchi. Be'yado Afkid Ruchi. Be'ez, be'yado, in his hands. Afkid, I give a deposit, Ruchi, my soul. Be'ez, Aleph Resh is Be'er. The word Be'er is the first three letters. Be'yado Afkid Ruchi. Be'ez, Aleph Resh. Now, the custom is to say Adon Olam before you go to sleep. Before you go to sleep, you say Kriya Shema on your bed. If you look in the sitter, the last thing Kriya Shema is Adon Olam. Last thing you say, you know, when the non-Jew says, now I lay myself down to sleep, right? Right. A Jew says the end, Adon Olam Asher Malach. And we end off the last line, B'yado Avkid Rechi, Peis Yishan V'Oyiro. In your hands, I give my souls a deposit. So says the Rebbe, he says, why do we say this before we go to sleep? He said, if a Jew would stop for a moment before sleeping, we'll consider that in the morning, what did you say in the morning? He said, God, the soul that you have given to me is pure and clean and beautiful. Every morning, you know, when you go to sleep, you know, your soul, parts of your soul goes up to heaven. Every morning, God gives you a new spark, a new spark. Every morning, you get a new spark of that soul. So he's as clean as a whistle spark. Now it's a full blank check. Fill it up. Fill it up with Torah. Fill it up with mitzvahs. And by the time you go to sleep, send it back a beautiful, amazing piece of soul. But then by the time you come to bed at night and you realize how unfaithful you were to that soul that God entrusted with you, the most precious possession He entrusted with you was a spark of soul. And if you think about that, and now you're going to sleep, you say, I'm going to deposit that soul to you. You gave me a beautiful, squeaky, clean soul. I gave you a blemished, broken up, beaten apart soul. That would break your heart. Right? You know, and you know it's true. You know it's true. Because each and every one knows that if, God forbid, we have a child that messes up their life, it breaks your heart. But for some strange reason, when we mess up our own life, it doesn't break our heart. It's a very interesting phenomenon. Because you could see your children clearer than you could see yourself. You see your kid is destroying himself. And you try to help him. He's not interested. He's being stubborn. And it bothers you. Ugh, I wish he would listen. I wish he would listen. The problem is, we don't realize that we are the kid ourselves. And we don't ever listen to what we really should be thinking about. So the Rebbe says, if you say, Biyadav Kidruchi, I'm giving back the soul, it should create a lot of uncomfortableness. Now, it can go one of two ways. Either you've just fallen to despair and become depressed, or you dig deeper till you find the soul and you explode. These are the obstacles. You go to bed, you're realizing what kind of obstacles I went through in that. And I'm a better person than that. I know I can be better. I got to dig deeper and find the truth that's there. So now with this, just have enough time to explain the difference now between the two songs and appreciate what's going on over here. When the Jewish people left Egypt, who was running the show? God took us out of Egypt. He brought the plagues. He split the sea. He took care of us. He brought down the manna. He gave us water to drink. He gave us the clouds of glory. And then He split the sea for us. And now it's time to sing. And Moshe says, listen guys, you don't know how to sing. I'm going to sing for you. I'm going to teach you how to sing. Moshe says, I have the clarity. I have it all. You're inexperienced. You don't know how to sing. And this was like the upper waters coming down. That's what it was. Well, exactly. It was a sea. It was upper waters. It was nice. It was amazing. But it wasn't yours. It wasn't yours. It wasn't the Jews. They did nothing to earn it. Ein chacham kabbalah nesayin. There's no wise person has experienced itself. Now, the second time they're singing a song, it's 40 years later in the desert. They're not kids anymore. You finally grow up. And to quote a song group from the 60s, you got to learn to make your own kind of song. Make your own kind of music. Sing your own kind of song. If you don't remember that song, that means you're pretty young. Even if no one will sing there at all with you, whatever how the words go, I think you know what I'm talking about. After 40 years, you got to make your own kind of music. Sing your own kind of song, right? You have to rise from all that schmutz, right? without being told what to say. When you were young, we told you what to say. There weren't any difficulties. But now you've got these difficulties. You've had difficulties. And I want to tell you more. There's going to be more difficulties now. Because when are they singing? They're singing now just at this point that now Miriam has died. Moshe, Aaron has died. Moshe is not going to take you into the promised land. You're now going to leave the desert now. And you're going into totally uncharted waters. You're not going to get manna from the heaven. The time is running out very soon. This era is going to be over. And there's going to be incredible obstacles. You're not going to be fed hand to mouth now. And now it's time to sing your own song. You have to be prepared for the real obstacles. For 40 years, I took care of the real obstacles. None. 40 years, just sitting there, I'm taking care of everything. Because you weren't ready for any of this. Now you got to start facing your obstacles. And as soon as they finish that song, all of a sudden they have to start, go to battle. They have to fight their first two battles east of the Jordan River against a giant Og and Sihon, and they're victorious. You have to start to fight and go against obstacles and find that you will see amazing things inside of you. And that's what they saw when that skulls came over there. They didn't realize how much Hashem was protecting them. They could have been totally destroyed. You didn't realize that Hashem was saving you. Well, guess what? You don't realize what you got inside of you that you've got to bring out. You're going to the Holy Land now. There's going to be a lot of obstacles. It's going to be much harder now, and you're going to be afraid. And now you've got to learn to sing your own song to bring out your own neshama. And that's why it's the song of the well. Not the song of the sea, the song of the well. Now, what is the relevance? It's incredibly relevant because our generation that we live in now is, there's been no generation in the history of the world that's been covered with so much dirt and filth and disgustingness than this world that we have right now. What the internet and communications has brought to your front door, in the past, you had to drive 20 miles to get to it. Now it's right in front of you, and not in front of you, it's inside of you. It's the way we think, it's the way we are, totally, totally covered with this. Right? And we could say, you know, even after 40 years, I don't know any Torah. I'm not any smarter. Right? And if you call out to Hashem and you ask a lot of questions, you have the ability to bring out water sweeter than from before. Remember, the well was the well of Miriam. Miriam comes the word mar, bitterness. Miriam came into the scene when it was very bitter for the Jewish people. But we're meant to get beyond that. So that's what this parsha is telling us. That there's incredible challenges. And there's incredible dirt like you never saw before in your life. Person say, I don't understand, right? You're talking about these great things. And I'm looking at things I shouldn't look at. And I'm reading things I shouldn't read. And I'm eating things I shouldn't eat. I'm exposed to so much things. You know how much dirt I've got on top of me? So those are just obstacles. If you break through those obstacles, to be honest with yourself, you break through, you're going to bring the sweetest water in the world, right? What do we feel like? We feel right now that our hearts are stone. Go think about your great grandparents in Poland and what Mesiras Nefesh really means, self-sacrifice, what it really meant in those days. That our great grandparents were willing to go without meals to pay for the Cheder Rebbe. Our great grandparents were willing to not have heat for a whole winter. So we can pay the Rebbe to teach Aleph Beis to the kids. That's what our great grandparents did. That's what they understood about Yiddishkeit. Because they had hearts made of water. Right? And we have hearts of stones. Right? It's hard, you know, and it's hard to be a good Jew. It's hard for me to let my heart feel for anything anymore. Because we're so jaded by what we're bombarded with. It's hard for me to look at what I should look at, listen to what I should listen to. So this becomes the song of our generation. We have a different song that we have to sing than other generations sang. So now some Jews, how they get out? They make up new laws. They say, we are modern Orthodox. Modern Orthodox can have mixed swimming. And modern Orthodox can have boys, young boys going out with young girls. And we'll say that that's okay, because after all, modern Orthodox says we don't have to filter a computer. So they come up with new halachas for the Jewish people instead of digging inside of ourselves. Instead of saying the Shulchan Aruch says, the Kodesh Jewish laws, you can't have mixed swimming. Kodesh Jewish laws, boys don't go out with girls to have fun. Kodesh Jewish law says, you don't do these things. And you have trouble with that? So how about you start to dig and overcome those obstacles? and find the real neshama inside of you instead of just accommodating the body and not willing to go through the obstacles. The quote-unquote modern Orthodox is a very broad term, but the modern, the real modern Orthodox means to say, we have a very happy life. We're not going to change our lives. The Torah is going to have to adapt to our lives. We don't want to dig. And we'll come up with all kinds of, you know, new halachas that never existed. Well, nowadays we don't have to worry about it. You know, women don't have to cover their hair. Women have to do this. And you don't have to do that. Where did these laws come from? He's not willing to dig. Not willing to dig. And that's really what this whole parsha begins with. The Parah Aduma. What are we dealing with? Death. Death. Now, there's many ways to be dead. There's physical death. And you can go into a shul, in many shuls, where the shul looks like they're dead. I've gone to many shuls where you think you're in a mortuary. There's 20, 30 guys there. You don't hear a sound the whole time. They're scanning. They're not davening. You're in a cemetery. You're not in a shul. So they're dead. When they're learning, fall asleep. Rabbi gives a drush. They fall asleep. Not our shul, but other shuls. That's called dead, right? So what do? You take those ashes. Those ashes, we burnt up the Parah Aduma. But we have to add to it Mayim Chaim, living waters. From the ashes. Ashes represents death, the ultimate death. Mix in the living waters, the person becomes holy. It says if a person comes in contact with the dead, we come in contact with the dead every day. Every time you turn on the computer, you're coming in contact with the dead. Every time you're talking to a Jew who doesn't understand what life's about, he's a dead man. Spiritually dead. Almost everybody you talk to is spiritually dead. And that impurity rubs off on you. You want to be like them. And what the best you can hope for is an uninspired Judaism. That's what we can thank technology to give us, uninspired Judaism. And that's dead Yiddishkeit. And that's your teenagers. The ones who don't want to go to school. Uninspired Judaism. So these are the tough months, Tammuz, of. There's so much dirt to uncover. But the rabbis say these are going to be the holiest months. Tisha B'Av is not too far away now, 5 weeks away. It's the saddest day of the year. The rabbis are going to tell us it's going to be the biggest holiday of the year. Why? Because there's so much dirt. If we're prepared to uncover the dirt, then we can bring explosions of the wells that are inside of us. But that's the song you got to sing. So let me close with an incredible story from this Rebbe, from a different Lubavitch Rebbe. The Rebbe Rayatz, Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak, his Rebbe told him the following story. It's a beautiful story. You can tell this to your children. There's a king who had a bird, a beautiful bird. It was the most beautiful bird that a king could ever have. You know, the colors were beautiful. It sang so sweetly. It was the most beautiful bird in the world. He spent so much time with that bird. One day, after many years, the bird broke one of its legs. And the bird now starts hopping around a little bit. And starts to limp, but the king still loved the bird. Tried to fix up, but couldn't fix up the leg. And then, a couple months later, the second leg breaks. Now he can't fly at all. He's just hopping around. And then starts to lose a little. The color is starting to fade. And the bird now is not the same beautiful bird it used to be. Matter of fact, not even close to what it used to be. And the king still, you know, would spend a lot of time with him, loved the bird, and felt very bad. And then one day, unfortunately, the bird died. And the king was so sad. He was inconsolable. And the ministers felt terrible for the king. So they wanted to make the king feel better. So they hired the most expensive craftsman to make a mock, a copy of that bird in gold. The most expensive material they can find. A perfect replica in every way of that bird. And it looked more beautiful than the bird itself. They give it to the king, and he starts to cry even more. And they say, why are you crying? Isn't this bird more beautiful than the bird you had before? So the king said, I will never love this bird. For all its beauty, it is not alive. The bird I loved was alive. That's the story his Rebbe told him. And the Rayatz explained and said, he would say, that there are people, there are Jews, who officially do what the Torah tells them to do. They do what's right, they do what's wrong. If Hashem says to get up in the morning, daven, they daven. But unfortunately, these Jews, there's a lot of these Jews, they are lifeless. They're like the golden bird. And really, Hashem loves his bird even with broken legs and broken arms and without so much color, as long as the bird is real and alive. Hashem likes a Jew who's real and alive. Many of us have broken legs and broken arms. Spiritually, we could be very broken. But if we're alive, that's what Hashem loves. And that's what Hashem wants. He doesn't want artificial Yiddishkeit. He doesn't want that, oh, it's easier to keep kosher, it's easier to have beautiful tefillin. That's all artificial. He wants to see that you've broken through some barriers. And when you broke through the barriers, you're going to break an arm, you're going to break a leg. You're going to be really busted up at the end of the day. And you may not look so beautiful after going through all this stuff. But you know what? At least you were alive. So this is what this parsha, this song should inspire us to dig. And the digging is painful, and you'll cry when you dig. And those will be the first tears, very sweet tears. And Hashem should help us. We all should find that real neshama beneath the coarseness of the realities of this world. Okay. I'm sorry? If I have today's class, why not tonight? The hardest part is preparing the class. Giving is the easy part.